These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
And actually, it's Conduits of Trouble time, which means it's Zolgad, Chip Scoggin, Star Tribune sports columnist extraordinaire, and of course, executive producer Declan Goff. Chipper, are you excited for the National Hockey League playoffs? Golden Knights and Wild start on Sunday afternoon.
I'm really excited. You know, I think it's going to be, it's weird. I'm writing this for Sunday, Judd. And, you know, it's not to say that Wild's going to win or I'm not saying they're favored or anything, but it feels different versus previous playoff times for the Wild, trips for the Wild, because of you feel like they have competent goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also feel like, what was the narrative that we heard after every single playoff ouster? We had our chances. We got scoring chances. We were there, but we just couldn't finish it. We had no, you know, we didn't finish our chances.
Yep.
Now, like, they have a couple guys that, hey, we need a goal, go score one. So they have guys that can step up and score goals and not need a puck to go off someone's butt or puck luck or whatever. In both Kaprizov and Fiala. And so that's not to say that they're, you know, that they don't have deficiencies, but it just feels like it doesn't feel hopeless going into this playoffs to me.
I agree completely. Yeah. And it feels like I think the most important starting point for me is the fact that you at least have the hope that Cam Talbot can have a good series. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, at some point in time with Dubnyk, it just got to be like, well, you know, there's going to be a weird goal or there's going to be two weird goals.
Yeah.
And Chip, we never said – I don't remember how many times that we said that Dubnyk won a playoff game, much less a series, which, I mean, you sometimes need your goaltenders in the course of a playoff series, especially if you're going to make a run to win you games, multiple games.
Sure. Yeah.
And how many times did we get done with, you know, a first or second round loss and say, Devin Dubnyk was really good? I don't remember it ever really.
No. And it, he obviously had some good games. I don't know if you'd call them spectacular, but there's always that, like you said, that thing in the back of your mind, like, when's it coming?
Yep.
You know, it's coming. And if fans and media felt that, you think players didn't feel that?
Of course they did.
Of course they did. And, you know, I'm sure they went on the ice thinking, you know, we better score four goals because odds are Doobie's going to give up a weird one at some point. And so, I just feel like you have a goaltender that you feel like is more reliable. And it just feels like you have a deeper lineup in terms of being able to get production than what we've seen in the past. I mean, it's, you know, I was thinking back this morning to those Blackhawks series and just, you know, when the Blackhawks needed a goal, Taves or Kane was going to go to score one. Right. And it's just, you just knew it was going to happen. And they did. We saw, I think I look back, there was a 1-0 game and I think it might've been 15 where Kane just beat Dubnyk and that was the difference. And so it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we know playoff hockey's tighter checking and it's harder to score, but with these two teams, do you feel like it's going to be a little more wide open kind of run and gun? Or do we think it's still going to be tightly, you know, hard to get scoring chances and not as wide open as what we think it might be?
I think it's going to be tight, but I also think it's going to be, if this makes sense, I think it's going to be tight, but I think it's going to be tight at high speed. So I don't know. I don't know that it's going to be offensively like a show, fireworks. But the great thing about this sport now is so many teams, and the Golden Knights and Wild are two examples of this, Chip, have phenomenal skill players and speed.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the starting point of the biggest difference, though, back to what you said, is Kaprizov. You now at least have your guy, and we'll find out if this comes to fruition in the playoffs, but you now have your guy that you think can counter.
Yeah.
Like you know, I mean, Zach for years, hey, you knew he couldn't score that key goal. You now at least have a guy that has the ability to score that goal that you desperately need. And I'm sorry, but Foligno can't score that goal.
Yeah. Well, you know, the game that you and I were at last Friday night, awful game. And I know it's against Anaheim and they're terrible. You know, they have the worst team, but that game was just, you know, that reeked of a team not respecting your opponent. I mean, they were trying things that the Wild wasn't, you know, some of the passes and the turnovers, and it just was not good. The whole game was a debacle. But it gets to overtime. And, you know, the rookie says, all right, I've had enough of this.
Yes.
And you're saying, are they going to have Rask in the second shift? You're telling me that. Well, this thing lasted 17 seconds. He skates up the ice, shoots the puck, gets his rebound, scores.
Yep.
Game over. And it just felt like, and granted, the opponent's awful, but we've seen him against good teams. When it's clutch time and you need something to happen, he will go do it. And so that's where this team just feels different. And I'm curious to see if he can kind of carry that over to the postseason where everything's magnified and you know he's going to be, when they're putting up their scouting report, he's number one on the list, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And so how's that? Does that change anything? You know, I'm just fascinated to see how he handles, you know, the bigger stage, because he hasn't been, you know, the regular season wasn't the stage definitely wasn't too big for him. And now I'm fascinated to see how he's going to handle playoffs too.
And I'm really curious to see. So the last game that these two teams played, which was on the 5th of this month, there was a 3-2 Vegas OT win. And there were a couple key things that happened. One, Kaprizov scored both of the Wild's goals in that game. And second of all, late. Yep. Third period. In fact, they had a 2-1 lead. I think Vegas tied it up then late and won in overtime. But what I really liked about that game was not the Kaprizov goals. It was in the first period where it was really clear that the Golden Knights were like, we're going to beat this kid up and see how he does. And there's a lot of star players that would shrink and be like, oh my God, what's going on here? And that was a precursor by the Golden Knights to see if that would translate to the playoffs. Because if he had gone away in that game, they would have said, we're on to something here, right?
Yeah.
But he stood up for himself. He wasn't dumb about it, but he definitely stood up for himself. Foligno did too. But I like the fact, because he's strong, I like the fact that Kaprizov came right back at them. And then he scored two goals. And that, to me, sent a warning flare to the Golden Knights that if you think that you're going to come in and you know, mark Kaprizov on the chalkboard as the top threat, which they will do, and try and beat him up, he ain't going away because of that.
Yeah, and it almost felt like that was a message or something that they were throwing out there for the playoffs to say, guess what, if we have to play you, this is what it's going to be like. And the fact that he did stand up and he wrestled the guy to the ground and didn't shy away, and not only did it not throw him off his game, he came back and, you know, he has, you know, that's the game where he batted the one out of the air, right? And then he off the face off, grabbed the loose puck there and just whipped around and threw a laser in there. So not only did it not disrupt him, like, he elevated his game and made him mad, and he came back full force on him. So that was good to see. But I also think that it also shows that, you know, he's not 18 or 19 years old. He's been playing against men for a while now at a high level. And so he's at a different – yes, he's a rookie in label, but he's played at – you know, he's played in the Olympics. He's played professionally against men. So he's kind of
– yeah, he's seen the stage before.
Battle-tested that way, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
But so what – what do you make of the fact that the Wild was 5-1-2 against the Knights during the course of the season? Now, what's interesting is, of those 8 games, 6 were decided by one goal. And here's the really weird stat. So the Golden Knights came in, went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Capitals their first year, and have been a really successful, good franchise. Mm-hmm. And the Wild all time, 11-2-3.
I know.
So if you were going to get Colorado, St. Louis, or the Golden Knights, you very clearly got the first round matchup that you wanted, but I don't know if this translates at all.
Yeah, is it
this?
You know, without having studied every game, is it, you know, the old thing that sometimes you match up better against one team than another? I mean, like the St. Louis. I mean, obviously they're that's probably a team that they did not want to play in the first round, right?
Absolutely not. No.
So I don't know. Is it as simple as sometimes you just match up better against a certain team than another?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Yeah, the Blues are the one team. But I know why the Blues are so tough.
Why?
They're built for the playoffs. And here's what they have. They have really – they have some really skilled players. They have the ability to slow you down and to beat you up. And it's legitimate. They beat you up. They're like, I would liken them to what we saw when the Vikings played San Fran a couple years ago in that playoff game. And yes. up front, they just kicked their ass.
On both sides.
Subtle. It was, we're going to kick your ass. And they did. And my feeling is the Blues have that. The Blues to me go back very much to being similar to those Kings teams that won two cups. Big, heavy, skilled enough. And the interesting thing is, aside from the unbelievable goal that Kaprizov scored against Binnington at some point at the X this season, Chip.
Yeah.
The Blues are the one team that had the ability to slow Kaprizov, and they didn't make him mad. They literally were able to take him off his game.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be fairly consistent. That was impressive.
I'm always impressed when a team, no matter what, you know, whether it's basketball or hockey or whatever, can dictate the terms of how a game is played.
Yes.
Right. If you have contrasting styles, whether it's, you know, hockey where we're going to slow it down and be physical, and or basketball where we're going to speed it up and we're going to play this game super fast, and you know you're like, we don't want to do that, and then you find out you're still doing it, you know.
Yes.
You get caught up into that trap of, you go in saying, okay, we can't play fast, or we have to play fast, we can't let them dictate the pace or the terms how it's going to be played. And the teams that are really good still find a way to do it, and it infuriates teams because they're like, God, this is exactly what we told ourselves we're not going to do. And we got caught up in that trap. So, so that, you know, if, you know, somehow they win or whatever, and they face St. Louis, that'd be, it'd be interesting to see if they could counter that and get the type of game that they want played.
And this is why, Chip, that probably the biggest disparity from regular season to playoffs in any sport is hockey. The hockey playoffs are a different, like, if you, because it's a long series, and if you figure out how to slow a guy down, like if you take Kaprizov off his game, the dynamic shifts completely. Yeah. But I do think that you can't be like gooning it up. You're not fighting. But if you could do what the Blues do, which the cliche is they play a heavy game, it changes things. And I do think that the Blues are going to give the Avs fits because they're going to frustrate them. If Binnington gets hot, he's probably the best goalie in that series. I am not going to be completely shocked if the Avs get ousted by the Blues. I think it's a long series, but I love how St. Louis is built.
You know, one thing I love about NHL playoffs versus, you know, NBA or whatever, just when you have a long series, the ebbs and flows of a long series, the emotion, the swings, especially if you have, you know, when you have teams winning on each other's home ice, and then it's like, okay, now the pressure shifts back here. No, the pressure shifts back here. And then the team's desperate. And then it's amazing. It's like a little mini soap opera, how, you know, one win can change the entire dynamic and tenor of a series. And I love that.
Game one, right?
All the pressure's on them.
On Sunday, now home ice is gone. Oh my God, Vegas is getting tight.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and then it swings back the other way. And it's just, that's what I love about it. It's just like each series, especially when they go seven games, because it's, you know, it's just kind of back and forth, and each team takes a turn feeling desperate or feeling pretty good, you know. I always think about how much fun we had in that 2003 playoff run. Just think about that. The Wild won six straight elimination games.
I know. They were dead twice.
Yeah. I mean, just how those series went, and just you feel like, you know, every day, okay, this is it. Well, no, they staved it off. No, this is it. No, they staved it alive. I mean, it's just, you just don't really get that very often, like in the NBA playoffs. I mean,
the great thing about that, and what I learned is, you know, you're down 3-1, which is daunting. It's a daunting deficit. And the interesting thing was, when you win game five, to what you're saying, all the pressure goes to the team that was up 3-1.
We lose another one.
Now we're at game seven, and game sevens can be coin flips. So that's where I will say this. The people that scoff at momentum are correct there. Like, I think there's momentum in games for sure. but in a series, it switches. I mean, it can go back and forth really quick.
Oh, I think without a doubt, because I think it does creep into the locker room that, oh my God, we had a big lead, 3-1, that's a big lead. Now all of a sudden, if we lose it, you know, if you lose game five, and then, well, we can't let it go to game seven, because then it starts building, right? That pressure on, and so it's built in drama, right? Yeah. Because of the, you know, just the nature. And the other thing is unlike basketball, the best, most talented team's going to win, where we've seen it, you know, millions of times where a team just completely outplay another, but you get a hot goalie, steals a game, and all of a sudden, mm-hmm. how is that? That's the one thing I always say about hockey is, like, I love it, but I hate it, because you can see a team just completely dominate a game and lose, and because you just have a goalie who makes sensational saves, and all of a sudden, that's got to be maddening if you're in a locker room and you're thinking, man, we did everything except beat this one guy with one, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's where, you know, I don't know that there are such things as upsets in the NHL playoffs. I'm sure there are by the betting, you know, odds and all that, but just practical purposes, I don't know that there is.
And the interesting thing about what you're saying too is how a hot goalie against you can make you so tight. Like if a goaltender plays well, all of a sudden it's that one guy who's got the opposing room saying, oh my God, is this going to really continue? Like, are we going to, and that team starts to press then, and it almost plays into the guy's hands. It's just such an interesting, as you put it, soap opera, or such an interesting dance to watch about how things shift and about how one guy can change how a team feels. And now they've gone from being confident to being like, boy, he stopped another shot. What's going to happen now? And then they start to take bet, you know, it's just a really, really fun process.
Well, you look at this with the Wild. Would you be surprised if any of these four teams emerged?
No, not really. No.
I mean, even if the Wild did, you might say I'm a little surprised, but.
Yeah, but not shocked.
You'd be like, oh, I'm stunned. How did this happen? Because we've seen them play well.
Talbot plays like Talbot is going to have to play. I mean, that will be why. If Kaprizov can score the big goals and Talbot plays like he needs to, then I think if you watch it, you won't be stunned. You'll be a little bit surprised, but you won't be stunned.
Yeah, you would be like, ah, this came out of nowhere. You know, not that like. But you're right. It with the Wild, it does come down to the goaltending, and can Talbot be good? I assume they ride him all the way through, probably, right?
Oh, he'll play every game. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. No. Especially with the day off.
Yeah.
You don't need and can he get the timely goalie? Timely goal from Fiala or Kaprizov.
Thoughts on the fact that it looks almost certain that Zach Parise will be a healthy scratch for the entire playoffs unless somebody gets hurt?
Well, you know, it's funny, Judd, as I mentioned earlier, that the game that you and I went to the other last week, Friday night against Anaheim, and as bad as they played, but they did have a couple stretches there in the second period where they scored a couple goals, and just the passing and speed and playmaking, it's a totally different game than we've seen from the Wild. I mean, this is a totally different style of play. And when you see it, when you see it in person, it does not surprise me that he would be the odd man out. I think they're just trying to go faster, younger and faster. And he just, would having his experience though benefit in the playoffs? Maybe. We'll see if somebody, if a player struggles in game one, could he, draw back in game two? I could see that happening, Joe, because he does have a lot of playoff experience to just have it on the sideline there,
Sure.
Fox. So, but I just think the way their style of play and how fast and the way they want to play it, it doesn't really surprise me.
What's the divorce like then? Like this, this has to end.
That's the interesting thing is like, clearly he doesn't fit with what they're doing. Was he scoreless in 9 games when he got scratched?
Yes.
So he's not productive. He's not getting any minutes. He's playing as few minutes as anybody on the team. I don't know. Like, what would his trade value be at his age, Judd? I mean,
not with that contract, almost nothing.
38 in that contract. Would he retire?
I don't think so.
He may not be there. It's
going to be a pain in the ass financially, Chip, but I think they might have to basically buy him out. I think that might be the – because, I mean, if you get a team to take him, that's going to be a they're doing you a major favor deal, and so you're going to have to take some stuff back. But I mean, it can't go on too. Like you just can't sit there and be like, well, he's got 4 years left on his contract. That's not going to be tenable.
But dude, he has one more year of big money, right? And I say big money.
Yeah. But the cap hits remain consistent and so you want to shed that if you can.
And the thing is like, if he can't crack your lineup now, I mean, they're going to have more guys next year how many of these guys, Boldy and,
No, you're right.
And how many of these guys were one-year deals that
Bonino is, Johansson is, most of those guys are.
I assume a few of those guys are going to come back, though, right?
I think in their perfect world, Bonino would come back and Ian Cole on defense would come back. I think Johansson's probably gone, which is fine. Bukestad, if he wants to come back, is probably would have to take a deal totally on the Wild's terms again. But they've got prospects coming up too, Chip.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
They've got some prospects now. I don't think you can sit Zach in the playoffs and then be like, let's work on things for next year. I think he's going to say, I want to play and I'm not playing here.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you're not going to scratch him at the end of the season and sit him in the playoffs and then say, because he clearly doesn't fit with what they're trying to do. So he's not going to fit a year. He's going to be a year older next year and you got more guys coming in. So he just, but it will be fascinating to see, you know, obviously if they could trade him, they'd love to. If he would retire, they would probably love that too, but he may feel like he still has some hockey left and doesn't want to retire.
He won't want to go out like this.
He'll want to do it on his terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll want to do it on his terms. Not forced into retirement.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's offseason. I just don't see him back. One way or the other.
Yep. In fact, I think this summer for Bill Guerin, I think this is going to be, because I don't think that this team is going to make a run. They might win a series, but I don't see them making a run. But I think that this summer is going to be the off season where we find out if Bill Guerin can make the moves to make a run. Because I think they're close. I do think they're close. And I think if he pulls the right strings in July and August of this year, I think you could be looking at a team that has a legitimate chance to make a Stanley Cup run next season.
Yeah, and it's I really like Guerin when you talk to him. I talked to him for a column I did on Dean Evason about why he's stuck with a guy who wasn't his guy. And you know, he's funny. He said, I only care about two things, team and winning. I don't care your status. I don't care your contract. I don't care. Past. I don't care about anything. Team and winning. He is going to mold it. And he did benefit from Paul Fenton, you know, some of the moves that Paul Fenton made, and even Chuck Fletcher, you know.
Yep.
But I do think he has a clear vision of the style of play he wants to play, the type of player he wants, the type of locker room he wants, and he does not care about hurting feelings to get that.
But Eno and Cole, to me, were so important because they – exemplify that. And they, of course, won cups with the Penguins when Bill was an executive with Pittsburgh. But I mean, if you look at how, and we obviously, as we've talked about before, don't go in the room now, so we don't get to see all the dynamics. But if you look at how they're wired and the stability that they bring and how many years this franchise didn't have that, they didn't have that guy. And Fenton saw that too. I mean, Fenton made some trades that were definitely, I've got to start picking apart this room because it doesn't work. From a standpoint of chemistry. So he saw that too. But I love the fact that a guy who was a captain in Bill Guerin in this league that won two Stanley Cups as a player and then two as an executive saw this through, because he knows, you're right, he knows exactly what the line is between I need good players and I need players that fit as well. And while the firing of Fletcher was necessary because Chuck was so in love with players that had to go, He does get credit for drafting Kaprizov. So like they all did contribute in their own way towards where this franchise is right now.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's, you know, him drafting Kaprizov, Fenton bringing in Fiala, But I agree to your point about Benigno, Cole. I'd even throw Foligno in there.
He seems No, you're right.
Those three guys just bring a veteran presence, leadership, toughness, the right kind of leadership you need. It just seems like this group, I know you like to call them the Furious Rallies or whatever it is, but there's a resolve about this group,
this
right?
This group doesn't feel like that, though. That group was like, oh, we're down. Let's start trying hard.
That was fake hustle.
fake hustle is a perfect word. I don't feel the Furious Rally about this group. They've done it before, but I don't think it comes from a place of dogging it for the first two periods.
Yeah. No. Very few times like that. I keep alluding to the one game we went to, the Anaheim game. That was a bad game. But by and large, it's like if they fall behind, it wasn't just because falling behind, but there is something about this team that you feel like they always have a chance because they have some goal scorers.
Yes.
Like, it just feels like, and maybe that's unfair to Kaprizov, a rookie, but you always kind of feel like, all right, do that thing where you do your magic, don't score a goal. Just have this, we've seen it so much from him that you just kind of feel like, okay, at some point he's going to turn it on and do something spectacular and they're going to have the lead.
And nobody is bigger than the team, which was not the case for a long time. There's no one person, or there's no two people or three. And I was always asked why I objected to Koivu as captain, because the response is, well, it does. Who cares? Like, I mean, the team knows who leads and who's not. I would say this now in retrospect, after a year of watching Spurgeon as captain, you can have the right guy as captain and have other guys, Benigno, Cole, Foligno, who are also captains, if Spurgeon, which he does, understands his role.
Mm-hmm.
Koivu thought he was captain and sort of, I think, objected to other guys trying to lead, and that created – so I think if you have the right person – I mean, I think, Jared, I think that move, in retrospect now, while I said it should be Foligno at the time, I sort of like it because I think it empowers Spurgeon, and I think he's done a really good job. But it's crystal clear that if I was to pick who leads this team, I would say Benigno, Cole, Foligno before Jared. Yeah. But Jared gets his role, and I think he does a good job. With Koivu, it was always the surliness of, well, this is my team, and I'm doing it. And it's like, no, it's not, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then Suter and Parisi tried to interject what they did. And that's why.
And then he had the young group.
Yeah.
Then he had the young group.
And Yo told you guys that. He flat out said they never meshed.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like you had like little factions, little cliques that just didn't work. How much do we – okay, so this team is better than what we thought. I don't think many people thought they would finish, in top 10 points. I think maybe people say if things break right, they might, sneak in one of those. But
I said fourth.
They're clearly a surprise team. How much do we, we credit all that, the leadership, just the better chemistry, everything, versus, they got a superstar.
Oh, that's the biggest. That's the starting point. But I also think Kaprizov could have been undermined to a large degree by the former club. Like, I'm glad he doesn't have to put up with that, because he's not a young man at 24, but he's still going to be impressionable. I mean, this is his first season. And in a new country and new everything. And here's the most important thing. And this is what the old wild wouldn't have done, and these guys did. They agree with us. They look at Kaprizov and say, I mean, Foligno flat out said he's a superstar. Like, for all Dean tries to say, everyone contributes, you guys don't understand. Marcus Foligno went to the mic and said, he's a superstar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about the old group and think about the factions. Kaprizov would have been a star. I'm not saying he wouldn't have, but at a very impressionable time in his career here, he also would have had people pulling at him. Hey, I'm the leader of this team. No, I am. Right. And so I think it's incredibly important that he is a superstar. He's the most important piece of this team, but the team's willing to accept that, which is a thing in sports that's important.
Well, it's funny when you hear the players talk about him, they have a little reverence about his skill too, because they're like, yeah, that guy's special, like that. So they know. I mean, players, they're not dumb. They see what a guy does on the ice. They're like, yeah, we couldn't do that. There's only a few people that can do what that kid does. That's why I give Dean credit that he has created or helped create, it's kind of flows from the top with from Garen, but and I know people roll their eyes at culture, but I think there is something to it. I mean,
we're
talking about, you know, how chemistry to me, culture is chemistry. It's the same thing, you know. Setting the you know, the mood in the being disciplined or demanding, being, you know, demanding of players, but also getting the best out of them, which is not easy to do when you're managing personalities and egos and all that.
Yep.
You're, you know, he scratched Parisi, he benched Fiala, he's done different things, he's moved line, but he's still, you know, like you said, we're not in the locker room to hear what guys, you know, say about personality and stuff, but it seems like he does a good job of drawing the best out of these guys. And so I think he does deserve credit for setting the environment or the culture there.
I'm saying Golden Knights in six. What is your prediction?
Yeah, I would say maybe Golden Knights. I think it's, you know, I think it'll be a long series. I'd be stunned if it's not. I would say six or seven, and I'll give Golden Knights just because they, you know, they have a little more history than the
goaltending too.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of goaltending. Speaking of chemistry and culture, let's go there. Let's go there. Let me pull up my handy dandy. Let me pull up my handy dandy old school legal pad here. I want to flip to my notes from hockey to the Minnesota Twins 5-game road trip. 1-1-4. They had a game rained out in Detroit. Let me give you three stats that jumped off the page when I looked them up. 5 games, okay? Chip Scoggins, three against the White Sox, 2 against the Tigers. 5 games. 53 men left on base. Runners in scoring position, 11 for 60, 183 average. And in game 2 against the White Sox, 5 of 12. So if you take that out, it's worse than that. And then bullpen ERA in the 5 games, 882. I mean, where do you even start here? And I will tell you this. Here's where I start. I think they have to do something because right now there is, and I'm shocked I'm saying this, there's no accountability for this.
No.
Like, well, I think you have to make a move that might come off as a sort of a cliched move just to try and wake some people up, because this is awful. They're the worst team in baseball.
Yeah, and it's Thad Levine was on this road trip with them, and I saw he did a Zoom with the writers and basically shot down the idea that they'd be sellers, because there's – and everything you hear from the organization, dude, they're still trying to get their arms around the shock of all this happening, because they didn't see this coming. It's like, well, guess what? It happened. This is who you are.
Right.
It's not early anymore. I mean, it's just not. And, you know, I know they, what was this thing? First 2 months, you see what you have. Next 2 months, you do something. Well, you're going to be so far behind the pack that you're not going to have a choice if you wait. Not improving. This is not – your bullpen is – a disaster at this point. You're hitting your lineup. You have guys that are just not, you know, good. And so I agree. I know what the fans want. I don't know that that's what's going to happen. I don't see him firing Rocco. I mean, I know the fans want, but
I agree. No, they won't.
But, you know, I don't know what move would ignite this team, because I think their problems are so widespread. It's, you know, it's not just the bullpen. It's not just the clutch hitting. It's,
yep.
You know,
I'm just saying a move to shake things up, to wake people up. I mean, it's like they are zombies going through baseball games.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
like they're just sleepwalking. I mean, I would love to at least have access to the clubhouse, because we saw 2019 and how fantastic that was. I'd love to see what sort of happened here.
Yeah, because when you look at him, I'm still one of your lines, like there's no there. Like,
no.
Watch him. There's like, there's nothing. It's just every day is Groundhog Day with this team. It's like you come out, maybe you lead, your bullpen falters, you don't get clutch hitting when you need it. And it's just like, okay, another loss. Next day, it's the same thing. So I know they're flabbergasted and stunned by how bad this team is, but if you keep saying that, that's not changing anything.
Well, and that's not an excuse to not do anything.
Exactly. I mean, that's not going to. Yeah, we're all stunned that there's.
Yeah, we're all. Yeah, but you've got to, like, you can't just say, "Well, we didn't see it coming, and we're shocked, and therefore we're going to stand pat." Like, I mean, that
see you next year.
That doesn't work. And by the way, the most important thing in lots of walks of life, including sports, is how you handle a crisis.
Sure.
Like 2019 was great, and it was great fun. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Chip, their longest losing streak was like three games or four games.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
Like there was no adversity there. There's adversity now. You know, go pull the fire alarm. Do something.
Well, and that's the thing. We talked about Rocco that year, and I think we all applauded his approach and kind of staying back and letting the clubhouse kind of self-police, if that's the right word, because you had crews and you had good leadership in there.
Yes.
But that's also – when they hit a record home runs and they were just blowing teams off the field because they were hitting five home runs a game. And I'm not saying that was easy to manage, but there were a lot fewer problems and strategic issues and things that Rocco had to handle and deal with. Well, you have a mess on your hands and he just doesn't look like he's capable of fixing it. You know, I mean, just he's had his own issues and, you know, the organizational philosophy with the starting pitching remains, I just don't get it. Although I think it might have been Aaron Gleeman that tweeted that their starters are fourth in innings.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that's where stats lie. That's all their starters. Like we've had, Chip, in-depth discussions about certain guys. Let Barrios go. Like Barrios. Shoemaker, I don't care.
Have a quick hook. Yeah.
Don't give me the rotation. Let's break down individual. And that's where there's a big difference between I use statistics and charts to do things, and I'm actually watching the game and paying attention.
Correct.
And like Pineda yesterday, you let him get to 100 pitches. You're hemorrhaging. Like you're dying here. You don't go get him and be like, well, he was in trouble. Guess what's going to be trouble? And it was if the bullpen comes in. So like, don't give me like, oh, and the fourth starter's throwing this man. I don't give a crap. Those three guys, and we've talked about it.
Yeah. And that's the thing is it's an organizational philosophy where it's just like blanket. No matter who it is. And there's no, it's just robot.
And Chip, Pineda is probably going to be traded. He's on a one-year contract. Have him throw 140 pitches. Like, he's not in your future, probably.
Well, and I've...
Yeah, it's just, it's a bizarre mentality. And you're right, it's a blueprint.
And I said this, too. Like, I don't know, like... And maybe they have the analytics to back it up, but show me where Jose Barrios throwing an extra 12 to 15 pitches every 5 days is going to ruin his career. I mean,
I know.
Then you shorten the workload on your bullpen, and you know, it's just.
Well, you don't have a good enough bull. I mean, at some point in time, you have to acknowledge you screwed up because they did, and say, okay, how are we going to make up for that? And go and by the way, I've now become convinced that this whole thing of going and hooking guys while Rocco is the face of it, it's certainly not all him, because if you recall, Megan talked to Falvey in Oakland or after that disastrous trip and the game where Blankenhorn booted the ball and Arise the ball away. And they pinch ran for Donaldson at second base in the 10th, which, by the way, I personally did not have a problem with, but Falvey did. And Falvey essentially told her flat out, I talked to Rocco about some things. Like I told him I didn't like what he did. Well, clearly the starting pitching was not in that equation because it hasn't changed since. So this is a signed off on blueprint from the top down. But what's weird is it's the top that screwed up the bullpen, not Rocco. So wouldn't you say to yourself, okay, when it comes to Pineda Rocco, we're going to have to let him go. I mean, let him blow the game himself.
Yeah.
That's preferable to the Groundhog Day of the bullpen.
And I think everything this, and I'm not just saying that Rocco doesn't have some leeway to make manager decisions, but I think philosophically, they always talk about collaboration and we're one. And we're on a.
Yep.
I think everything, something that, you know, something that big and widespread in terms of starter uses, that's not a Rocco thing. That 100% comes from as an organizational philosophy that this is just what we believe and this is what we're sticking to. And he's the one that has to execute it. And so, you know, I would love to know what happened if he said, you know what, screw it. What would be the fallout from that? If Pineda, you're going.
You know what? He must think his job is safer by going along with their philosophy, even if it costs them games.
Yeah.
But I mean, this goes back to the playoffs. Here's my biggest question about everything now. And I asked this question about Rocco after the Yankees and then the Astros series, but I will now expand the question, Chip, to include Falvey, Levine, and the front office. What are you learning? What are they learning? Like, this is a learning lesson. If nothing else, it's a learning. Yeah. Like, this is a valuable, and those guys are young. I mean, they're not old, crusty baseball men in their 60s. This is an opportunity to learn. What are you learning from this? Because if you don't learn, like if you're just like, we got to fix it and then it's done, that's a lost opportunity for valuable lessons.
I know Pat's been, Royce has been harping on this a lot lately, but it's like, where are they developing pitchers at?
I know.
I mean, the pitching has improved. When you look at the stats, and I mean, they're what, third or fourth in overall ERA last year. And so it has gotten a lot better, but it's been, you know, older guys they brought in and
the young arms.
I was talking to him, when I was writing about the bullpen a couple weeks ago. He's like, "Look at St. Paul's roster. There is nobody there. I mean, the one, Johan
Duran,
is the one guy you might point to. But it's like, where are reinforcements coming from? They're not.
And he's hurt. Yeah.
And he's coming back from the shoulder stuff.
Yep.
Who are they developing here?
Right.
And so I think that's something you have to. You look at, and the other thing is, and maybe it's the league wide thing that you turn the bullpen over every year or every couple of years because it's just the nature of that thing. But they have to be second guessing big time. Like, okay, we had way too many question marks and unknowns going into this year with that group.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, the Colomé signing has been a complete disaster. The White Sox clearly saw something. Like the White Sox have to be laughing that a division opponent, their supposedly was going to be their closest foe, signed him. They have to be laughing at that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's just a lot. But I mean, there's so many lessons that can be. I mean, this is a disaster for this team. This is a complete disaster. But my problem to backtrack Chip to Baldelli was that Yankee series taught him nothing.
No.
It taught the team nothing. It didn't teach anybody. Hey, Jose Barrera's been really good. You know, ordinarily we hook him, but how about we don't hook him today? You know, mm-hmm.
Like the Sano thing, they keep waiting on Fool's Gold. I guess I don't know.
Well, now he's not playing. He didn't play two or three games in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean,
just a healthy sitting on the bench. And Chip Astudillo's playing. If it were Kirilloff, I'd be like, I totally get this. It's Astudillo. He is a part-time player. I mean, I championed in 2019 for Astudillo not to be sent down based on one thing, clubhouse chemistry.
Yeah.
It never had to do with it.
No. Yeah.
But I mean, guys genuinely liked him, which was awesome. But I never, ever said that guy should be a big league player playing much.
Every day. You know.
But I know he can hit, but what I told Mackey last week was if Williams Astudillo is playing an important role on your team's bad.
You have a problem. Yeah. And so what do you do with Sano? You know, I mean, you just try to trade him, but what's
not
the value?
Not getting for him. I don't know at this point. I honestly don't. On that one, I don't know.
I mean, he's 28, right? Didn't he just turn 28?
Yes.
This is who you are. I mean, every time you say, you know, they should trade him, people are like, oh, great. You know, he'll be the next Ortiz. No, he's not.
No. Do you know what he is? And this is a sad statement right now. He's the next Oswaldo Arcia.
Yeah.
At the rate he's going, Miguel Sano will be a Mexico City Red before he'll be a Cincinnati Red.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just him.
And he has what, two more years on a contract?
One year after this.
One more year.
Three years at $30 million.
So, and he's their, third highest paid player?
Yep.
They go Donaldson, Cruz, then him?
Yep.
And he's unplayable?
Yep. Exactly right. Exactly right.
So, I mean, and it's just, you know, how do you fix that, Judd? I mean, how do you fix that? How do you fix the bullpen at this point?
Well, I think you got to do something to try and wake guys up, because I think there are some guys just who are flat out asleep at the wheel right now. And yeah. I don't know why. And I don't know what that, if it's because the chemistry has gone really bad, which it certainly yeah. looks like it might have. I have no idea what role Donaldson is playing off the field. I mean, that guy's wound yeah. tight. He came here to win a World Series, not for this. So
well, we thought he'd be the guy to bring the edge leadership that would hold people accountable.
I loved it at the time, yeah. but I'm just saying, I think you need to do something. I think you need to try and give this team an electronic shock to see if yeah. that works. And if it doesn't, then you just start to dump guys. I mean, you got a lot yeah. of guys you can trade.
Well, the longer this goes, I mean, it's, you know, if something doesn't happen quick, then you are going to be sellers. And then you look at, okay, can you get something for Cruz, Maeda?
Yes.
You know, those type players. I mean, I think Cruz would be valuable to
Simmons plays shortstop. Great glove. Yeah. He'll help somebody. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I think I think the last ditch will be to try and do something that gives them a shock. And if they still, or they're just bad, and then you just start to trade guys. And Cruz has to go, Hap has to go, Pineda has to go, Simmons has to go. Like, I mean, I can go down the list. I don't think you could trade Donaldson, because I think you'd have to pick up too much of his contract.
Well, he's got a huge, yeah.
And Sano's got no value.
And Sano, yeah, but I mean, it's like, all right, Polanco, Kepler. I mean, what happened to those two guys?
I mean, Polanco has rebounded a little bit of late.
A little bit. He started, yeah.
But I have no idea. It's a great question. Those contracts look so team friendly at one time. And now they're not albatross contracts, but they're certainly not favorable to the team.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Kepler hit a home run, what, yesterday or the
before? Couple days ago.
But what's.
I know.
There, you know.
I know. It's a mess. Well, and he still hits for some power. Garver. I mean, yeah. Mitch Garver's not, he's a shadow of the player that he was.
I think most people knew that was going to be an outlier, you know.
But not like this, to me.
Not like this, correct, yeah.
All right, sir, great stuff. I will talk to you next week, brother.
All right, brother. We'll see you, man.
Talk to you later.